We've seen a lot of highlights over the years from Tiger Woods, but last night brought what he called the most embarrassing moment of his career. To say he came up short doesn't go far enough to fully capture the moment. We'll show you just what had everyone laughing, including the GOAT. And when we might next see Tiger Woods on the PGA Tour will be one of our topics when we convene a roundtable with Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. And as anticipation builds about that possible deal between the PGA Tour and the Saudi Public Investment Fund, we'll discuss what reunification could actually look like. We'll also detour down south to Mexico, where Jake Knapp is the defending champion this week on tour. Golf Today gets underway right now.
Golf Today.
The Mexico Open has a long tradition dating back to the 1940s, only recently became an official PGA Tour event. This now marks the fourth consecutive year. We're going to get set with a preview before the action is underway from the Vedanta World tomorrow here on Golf Channel. Hey there, welcome inside our Golf Channel Worldwide headquarters. George Savarikas hanging with Eamon Lynch as you're watching Golf Today. And my favorite pictures that we see with Jake Knapp, the old bouncing career at what was a restaurant called the Country Club, fittingly, in Costa Mesa to now PGA Tour winner, harkens back to my career as the least intimidating door guy of all time at Harpo, shout out, in Columbia, Missouri. But I think the big question with what we saw last night with TGL, Eamon, we see Tiger Woods in competition, but he didn't play. Genesis Invitational's host was a little murky on when we might see him next. So if you looked into your crystal ball, any chance that Tiger tees it up before the Masters?
This is where you start to read the tea leaves of what Tiger's established routine was for years. There would appear to be two options that jump out at you, which is the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill, tremendous success there, and also the Players' Championship. But they're both extraordinarily demanding tests, very demanding golf courses. The one positive was it was the personal circumstances of his mom's death that led to the withdrawal from the Genesis. He wasn't flipping the off switch because of another injury, or that he never said that the body wasn't ready in any respect to compete, which does give you some cause for optimism that at least he could physically show up and play at some point. It's just a matter of everything's cleared up in terms of the process that he needs to go through after his mother's passing. I'm hoping that we'd see him in a couple of weeks at Bay Hill. I'm not so sure we'll see him for next week's hometown game at the PGA National for the Cognizant Classic. That would seem to be a little bit too soon. That's also a really demanding golf course.
Yeah, I couldn't see the Cognizant. I think Bay Hill, given his track record there, makes a lot of sense. I think if you're the PGA Tour and golf fans, then you're making your plea directly to Tiger right now. Play either Bay Hill or the Players would be phenomenal. A course where you don't need a hit driver around it. It's a shorter course by modern PGA Tour standards. The stadium course at TPC Sawgrass, a lot of holes are pinched where you're hitting less than driver or iron off the tee. But I think if the body is willing and able, it would be in Tiger's best interest to get one tournament under his way before he tries to go after that elusive 16th major and sixth green jacket. To just have that be your first tournament of the year, it's such a huge ask, especially at his age, to think contending would even be a flight of possibility.
And we spend so much time these days talking about when we're going to see live guys play again. Let's start with Tiger. Let's get Tiger out there on the golf course, and then we start to worry about everyone else.
We did see him last night. Liv, what did they have for an encore after that triple header on Monday? All three matches then were decided by one. Tiger Woods, the final score, 10-3. Jupiter Golf Links 1 and 2. That was match number 9 for TGL this year. And Jupiter Golf Links now looks like they're on the...
Finally, we've got a New York team that's able to perform. It just happens to be TGL.
Yeah, after the loss, Tiger and his team spoke with the media.
Can you guys talk a little bit about what you learned from today's match?
Go ahead, Tiger.
I'll let you go.
I just pull
the stool up. I learned that I had 99 yards. I hit a 100-yard wedge shot.
Oh, we didn't have 99 yards.
That was the most embarrassing thing that has ever happened. I can't believe that just happened.
Tiger, I'm curious about your routine on TGL days. You've spoken in the past about waking up at 3 a.m. to get ready to play a tournament. What's your day look like when you set to compete at 7 p.m. here?
it's different. It was a busy morning with some work stuff that I had to do. I got here, probably didn't exactly do my normal routine, but hey, it's just the way it goes. It's different playing late at night like this. This is definitely different for us as golfers, but hey, it is what it is.
Tiger over here, you mentioned in your pre-match interview with Scott Van Pelt that this is where your mom last saw you play. Mm-hmm. What do you remember her impressions of TGL's potential as an avenue to create interest in golf?
Well, I think that she really enjoyed watching me play, and it was awesome to have her in the stands and watching us play, and having the kids here and family and friends, and so it was a great moment, and I'm definitely appreciative of her being here.
Tom?
To expand on a little bit, the emotions, Tiger, coming in, and you mentioned on that same interview that it was the last time she saw you play golf. Just a little bit, what were the, when did that kind of start hitting you? What was that walk? Was that walk in something that was?
I had a hard time driving down here. I hadn't hit a golf ball since I played with the president, and just put everything away and shut it off. And I had really a hard time getting here, and then reliving all the moments that we've had. My mom, how excited she was to have Charlie drive her here. So those are some great moments and great memories, and it's been a hard process.
Tiger, you spoke Sunday about the need, willingness to play more golf. Would next week be a consideration for you?
I really haven't thought about golf, I don't think I'm going to be thinking about it for just a little bit here.
Tiger hasn't thought about golf, assuming PGA Tour golf. I want the audience who's watching golf today. This is a parallel universe where Eamon Lynch is the advisor to Tiger Woods. And you get to tell Tiger you have to play one event between now and Augusta to have your best chance of getting to 83 and separating yourself from Sam Snead. What layout would be best suited for Tiger Woods to play next?
Bay Hill. And Bay Hill is a grind every year that the Palmer family almost want a U.S. Open style test there. So you could argue in some ways that doesn't necessarily suit a guy who hasn't played a lot of competitive golf lately. But the level of institutional knowledge Tiger has of that golf course with seven tour wins there, seven or eight, I think it's seven. It's just an enormous leg up versus what he would have to do on a course where he doesn't have a particular level of familiarity. And the Players, sure, he's won there twice, but he hasn't competed in the Players in quite a few years at this point. I think institutionally, the best bet would have to be Bay Hill.
Easy to lose track. He has eight wins at Bay Hill. But I mean, there's so many spots where you're like, okay, how many?
Got a Hall of Fame career in all of these places.
I'm with you, and it's curious to determine what's the balancing act where you're Tiger, you're 49, yeah. Body's a little brittle. That's a U.S. Open style punishment that you receive playing Bay Hill week. Guys are mentally and physically exhausted by the end of it, but I couldn't envision Tiger going to the Players like Scottie Scheffler last year and being able to post 20 under. I don't think he has the horsepower. I think at this stage of Tiger's career, if he's going to have an on week, it's being bogey resistant, not a guy who's going to make birdies in bunches, where that would be more of the DNA or the recipe you would need at a Bay Hill, where if you're a couple under, there's a chance you have a top 10 finish and are in contention.
Yeah, I definitely think it needs to be tough for everyone. And in a way, Tiger's always got to run the table at this point now. He's got to be having a great week, every part of his game going. He needs the weather to be good for his body to cooperate. What we're seeing out of Tiger, I think, over the last few weeks, he seems very far away, though, from being Tiger, the competitive golfer. We see Tiger, the grieving son. We see Tiger, the father, who's spent a lot more time around his kids in public settings. As well, you're seeing Tiger, the backroom negotiator, who's involved in all of this quasi-political stuff with the tour, and you're seeing Tiger, the league founder of TGL last night. It does speak to the scope and scale of Tiger Woods' commitments on a day-to-day basis. So you can understand why the time to prep for competitive elite golf might not be there. But I do think he needs to find a venue where, if he's going to try to sharpen those skills, he's got to sharpen them at a point where that the mind game matters as much. And we've seen that over the last few years at Bay Hill. It really is a grind for those guys out there. And a lot of them can't actually adapt to that kind of squeeze that they're put under with the course conditions at Bay Hill. I think he could adapt to that. And to your point, he doesn't need to be rolling birdie after birdie out there, because sometimes par does pretty well at Bay Hill.
And you got to remember, on a human level, everyone goes through the grieving process at their own speed, and they handle it internally kind of what's appropriate for them. And when Earl passed in May of 2006, Tiger took some time away from the game, missed the cut in the 2006 U.S. Open, didn't seem to be himself, and then his next start at the Western was T2 and then one after that. But it took him maybe a couple months to kind of return to life on the PGA Tour as is and become the high-functioning world number one dominant player that he was. So I could see why, when he says, my mind's not on competing on the PGA Tour right now, it could maybe take him until the Masters, till he says, okay, I'm all systems go, and I could have this singular focus on what my end goal is, and that's teeing it up in the season's first major.
Yeah, and there's an enormous difference between showing up for a two-hour package TGL match on a Tuesday night than showing up for 72 holes of intense competition at the most elite level of the game. He could still be a long way away from that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's shift gears to this week's PGA Tour Stop Mexico Open at Vedanta World and look at the favorites this week, courtesy of our friends at DraftKings. Akshay Bhatia, the shortest odds at 14-1. Rasmus Højgaard, 18-1. Kurt Kitayama's won on the PGA Tour, 20-1. And then you see some other names just behind him at 22-1. And slightly longer odds, Stephen Yeager, Michael Kim at 25-1, among others, with Taylor Moore. So remember, Akshay Bhatia got his first dub in a playoff over Patrick Rogers. That was the 2023 Barracuda Championship, his first win on the PGA Tour, made birdie on the last hole of regulation to tie Rogers, and then won that first playoff hole with a par a year later. This was arguably one of the best tournaments of 2024. Denny McCarthy, Akshay Bhatia go to a playoff. They were, I believe, 8 shots clear of third place. Bhatia makes birdie on the 72nd hole and then birdie from 6 feet in the playoffs. He dislocated his shoulder on the 72nd hole, fist pumping, was able to set it back in place and get his second win on the PGA Tour, which, what a wild story that was, to separate your shoulder and then get the win. Now let's welcome in Damon Hack, reporting from Mexico this week. Damon, you know it's a different vibe in Mexico when the 30th-ranked player in the world is the clear-cut favorite coming in.
It's a great point you make. Age 23, 2 PGA Tour wins under his belt, George, and Akshay Bhatia is the favorite here at the Mexico Open at Vedanta. But you'll recall, when he turned professional at the age of 17 back in 2019, there was some struggle for him. But the last couple of years, he's found confidence and consistency. You mentioned his 2 wins, Barracuda in a playoff over Patrick Rogers. And then you mentioned last year, I was at San Antonio at Valero when he made that putt on the 72nd hole, starts fist pumping, the shoulder pops out. You know, none of us know it at the time. He has to pop it back into place, goes into that playoff against Denny McCarthy and gets his second win on the PGA Tour. When I spoke to him yesterday, he said he realizes, though, he's not quite yet a finished product.
Yeah, I mean, still learning every week. You know, it's been a slower start this year than it was last year. And so finishing top 10 last week was really good for kind of how I feel. And kind of the goal for the week was to have my best finish of the season. So, you know, I'm just excited to keep playing out here. And it's such an enjoyable, you know, opportunity for us to travel to, you know, different countries. And, you know, I look forward to the nice weather and the pool and the beach.
And another reason for Bhatia's strong odds this week, he finished solo fourth here back in 2023.
Damon, there is a tremendous European rush of success here at the start of the 2025 PGA Tour season. When you look at some of these winners dating back to Sepp Straka at the American Express, and obviously most recently Ludvig Åberg at the Genesis Invitational. If you're Luke Donald, you got to be very happy looking at this. Are there any of the European guys that you're looking at in the field this week who you think could be a contender to keep this kind of streak going?
Yeah, I'd say another 23-year-old Rasmus Højgaard. I bumped into Rasmus on a water taxi that the players take from the driving range to the hotel. And it was pretty funny. You know, I obviously thanked him for joining us on Golf Today with his twin brother Nikolai a few weeks back. And I said, you're playing here for the first time. So how do you study this golf course? What are the most important things for you to learn? He said he planned on playing 9 holes yesterday, 9 holes today, and focusing on learning the sight lines off the tees. He also planned on having his caddy walk all 18 holes as well. And he said, listen, I've played all over the world. I'm a 5-time winner on the DP World Tour. I've played on a lot of different golf courses with different grasses. He also said, Eamon, that it was a good thing. He doesn't know where the trouble is, that sometimes when you know too much, there's scar tissue. He has no scar tissue. He has a clean slate and very excited to try to notch his first win on the PGA Tour this week.
So, Damon, are you 1-for-1 this year incorrectly identifying the Højgaard twin, or did you walk up to him and say, hey, Nikolai?
And funny you should ask, Eamon. So we're having this conversation about the golf course, and he goes, by the way, how do you know I'm Rasmus? And my heart literally skipped a beat. You know, that's the worst thing you could do is possibly misidentify the subject that you're interviewing. I said, well, you've got the longer hair. And he said, you're right, I am Rasmus. So I exhaled, and I'll tell you one thing. If Rasmus gets a haircut, Eamon, we could all be in a lot of trouble.
Then you got some problems. I love, D-Hack, that you're pounding pavement this week, taking water taxis to and from. So I nonstop grind in Mexico. And here's how you can watch coverage of the Mexico Open at Vidanta World. It begins Thursday at 4 o'clock on Golf Channel. Same story on Friday into the weekend. Slightly different air times. 1 o'clock Eastern, Golf Channel switches on over to NBC at 3 Eastern both days, as well as Peacock.
Well, there's no shortage of activity outside the ropes these days either. Deal or no deal? When will Tiger tee it up again? Just a couple of subjects we tackle with Rex and Lav. That's coming up. If you're in the market for a podcast, be sure to take a listen to the Golf Channel podcast with Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. And if you miss any of Golf Today, you can check out our podcast, which includes the best interviews from the show. And be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page. It's time now for a Golf Today roundtable as we tackle the increasingly political questions around this game. We're joined by Golf Channel's Answer to Joe and Mika. That's Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. Ryan, let's start with you. We're having this conversation about Tiger. We saw him last night. We're debating when's the likelihood that we're going to see him on green grass again. What's your best guess?
My best guess, Eamon, would be the Masters, which seems pretty crazy to think about, since he was literally ramping up just a couple of weeks ago for the Genesis Invitational at Torrey Pines. But if you watched TGL in its entirety on Tuesday night, I mean, he looked really stiff. He hit a lot of poor shots. He told reporters afterward he actually hadn't hit a club since that round with President Trump about a week and a half earlier. And so we went from, you know, ramping up for Torrey to now it seems like he's powering down a little bit. And, you know, keep in mind, back in 2006 when Tiger's father Earl died, he died from cancer. Tiger had sort of made peace with it. And, you know, it still affected him profoundly. And he rushed back to the U.S. Open, then took some more time off. The fact that Tita died so suddenly, at least it seems that way, seems to have really taken a toll on Tiger. You know, as much as certainly the PGA Tour would love to see him play in the Players Championship, particularly with the deal being close now to being completed, a golf course where he's had success about a dozen or so years ago, but can sort of plot his way around strategically. That, to me, makes more sense than the Arnold Palmer Invitational. But at this stage, I just don't think it's likely.
Yeah, it seems like the Masters would make the most sense. With Tiger's involvement in the discussions, we've heard from Rory McIlroy, Jay Monahan, et cetera. If you're Rex, the average fan at home, it seems like we've been hearing this for 6 months, 9 months. The deal's imminent. It's coming soon. It's going to be down the pipe. Are we finally at a stage where we should be optimistic?
I think we are, and for a lot of different reasons. Certainly, you heard Tiger Woods talk in the CBS booth on Sunday at Torrey Pines. There was a lot of optimism coming from him, not quite as much as the commissioner when we spoke with Jay Monahan last week, but certainly he feels like they're on let's say, call it the downwind run of these negotiations. And getting the president involved, having that meeting with him last week at the White House, I think that's going to go a long way, at least clearing the pathway with the Department of Justice and the ongoing investigation that, okay, now the two sides now have a pathway going forward. I don't think we're close to whatever the final product is going to be, because I think that's going to be much more complicated. That's going to be delicate, to use Eamon's terms, a lot more political. But yes, I think we're close to whatever the financial terms are going to be of this deal.
Ryan, Tiger said when he was in the booth with Jim Nantz at the weekend that fans are eager to see the best players play together again, which is obviously true. The game does feel fractured and diluted. Do you think the decision makers have convinced themselves that that's all that's really wrong with the product, or that that's the easy solution, that simply putting these guys together is going to be enough to overcome whatever fan disaffection has risen up over the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, Eamon, that's a point that I keep coming back to, because certainly, you know, Jon Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka, whatever LIV player you want to insert, you know, into a PGA Tour signature event, for instance, would offer at least a slight bump in his interest. But you're essentially just going back to what the PGA Tour was like in 2021. This should be, if you're a PGA Tour decision maker, a golden opportunity to really capitalize on the moment, not just to have reunification, not just to have all the best players together once again. The PGA Tour in 2021, when all these best players were together again, was clearly a stale product that then spawned a rival league to generate more interest, try and get fans from a younger demographic, whatever the case may be. And so you still, if you're the PGA Tour, need to look at a pared-down schedule, look at better venues, look at worldwide appeal, look at team formats, match play, anything to sort of engage that younger audience as well. And so that's what I hope, because it seems like reunification, best players all back together again, is the main talking point, but there were larger issues that led to the advent of LIV, not just having the best players all in one spot.
Rex, idea to throw your way, and tell me I'm crazy. All-star breaks have been in the news for the last week with what the NHL has done with the Four Nations Cup. We have the finale tonight, been a big success. NBA reconfigured theirs, very mixed reviews. I've said historically that you could come up with a unique concept for golf with maybe a limited field based on FedEx Cup points, long drive, other skills competition around it, make it a celebration of golf. Do you think an all-star game could ever work on the PGA Tour?
I think it could work as we look long-term of, and we just talked about a deal between the Public Investment Fund and the PGA Tour. Imagine a scenario where you have a team event in the middle of the season with a team of players from LIV and a team of players from the PGA Tour with maybe some sort of Ryder Cup style format and also a skills challenge. Make it a weekend. Like, I know the NBA is probably not the best example right now, but certainly what the NHL has done with Four Nations, I'm tuning in to watch the game tonight, and I'm not a hockey fan, but they've created something out of thin air, and I think there is an opportunity for golf. If you can reach some sort of agreement between the two sides and bring unification back to the game, that could be a fun element of all this.
Rex, I want to talk about a guy who came close last week, Maverick McNealy. He's on the Player Advisory Council. He's been quite open about his desire to get to the policy board to make a difference in a particularly interesting time in the game. You got to admire the guy wanting to make a difference. Being on the board hasn't worked out very well for other players in terms of their game, particularly Patrick Cantlay, who's shown a drop-off in his form over the last couple of years. Is there any concern on behalf of a Maverick McNealy, who seems to be finally hitting his stride on the tour as a competitor and a contender, to be detoured into that kind of activity?
I think it's a great example of be careful what you wish for here, Eamon. And we just had Johnson Wagner on the podcast on Monday talking about when he was on the policy board. And he had been strongly advised by his manager at the time, it was Mac Barnhart, that he shouldn't go on the policy board until you're at the back end of your career, until you've gotten to the point where you realize you're probably not going to win again, you're not going to contend too much, and you do want to make a difference. I was taken talking with Mav last week at Torrey Pines. I had a very similar conversation with Rory just a few years ago when he first went on the PAC, and he was running for PAC chairman with the idea of going to the board. And I do admire the idea that both of the players pretty much said the same thing. It's such a pivotal time in the game. They want to be a voice in the room that decides how professional golf moves forward. But I think you're absolutely right. I don't think this is a stat that's been proven wrong so far. No one has ever won a major while serving on the policy board.
Wow, that's a heck of a stat. Lab, this is difficult for me to say on national television, but Eamon Lynch had a very good point yesterday. We had a conversation with Paul McGinley, who said that in the future, a change he would like to see was some type of player contracts and guaranteed appearances so sponsors would know who was teeing it up when. Amon said the players really haven't had to sacrifice the last 2 to 3 years. They've been able to take a lot with the changes we've seen to the professional game. So the question for you is, what's the point of critical mass in which the players would need to make some sacrifice for the greater good of the tour and the fans?
By being contractually obligated to play in certain events? I mean, I certainly understand the appeal from a sponsor, from a fan perspective, to know exactly who is going to be teeing up. But I think if you pare down the PGA Tour schedule enough to a point where it might not be necessary, and you would have, you know, potentially a schedule of just signature events or at tournaments where players would really want to show up, that the top players are going to want to play in those events, and they're going to have to play in those events to, you know, maintain status, hit certain benchmarks, make sure you're inside the top 50, top 30, top 10, whatever the case may be. And so I think it's really going to come down to the schedule. If you're creating a schedule in 2026 and beyond that is so appealing to players, I don't think you have to go the next step in having a contractual obligation. But I certainly see where Amon's coming from in that respect.
Sticking on the subject of the schedule here, Rex, weeks like this week in Mexico, they've always existed on the PGA Tour where, you know, some players are taking time off between a West Coast swing and East Coast swing. Excuse me. Do you think as time wears on that the private equity guys in a for-profit model will continue to value these slower weeks? Or do you think that compression is going to get to the point where it just seems to be one barn burner tournament after another, and that these slower weeks just cease to exist on the PGA Tour, at least as frequently as they have in the past?
George, I'm going to feel your pain here, and I'm going to say my colleague Ryan Labnett was right on this front, and he's brought it up on numerous occasions, that less has to be more. And I think all of us can agree on that front. Rory probably said it best last week when we were talking with him about the idea of whatever the game becomes, if there is unification between the two sides, that it would look something like the Formula One model, where less is more, where you maybe have 20, 25 events, and you cherry pick the best events from around the world. That's the DP World Tour. That's the PGA Tour. That might be whatever happens in Australia or Japan or the Middle East. So I think that's the option of where we're going. And if that's the scenario, then those 20 or 25 events would be the top tier. And then you would probably have events, maybe like this week's event, that would move to the second tier that you would still need because there's still a demand for that type of competition, for that type of meritocracy that you would have to create that ladder for players to play their way in. But yeah, I can see that.
Still giggling at the Joe and Mika reference, but Rex and Lav, always good to be with you too. Till next time, gentlemen.
Thanks, guys.
More golf today when we return on the other side of the short break.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Last summer at Hazeltine in Minnesota, Jose Luis Ballester became the first player from Spain to win the U.S. Amateur, holding off Iowa sophomore Noah Kent 2-up in the 36-hole match. And get this, on his 21st birthday, Ballester, the only player in the top 10 of the world amateur golf ranking to reach the round of 16, and he joined Jon Rahm as the only Spaniard to win a USGA event. Let's take a look at the PGA Tour University Rankings, a program that awards professional status to the top graduating golfers. Ballester is competing on a sponsor exemption this week, making his third career PGA Tour start, including his second in the past 3 weeks, and he spoke with Danny Hatt.
It's going to be my third time here in the PGA Tour. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to play in the weekend yet, so that's the first goal. They say that the third time is a charm, so hopefully that comes through this week, and once I make it to the weekend, I will, you know, think on different goals.
What have you learned so far about competing against the best players in the world? Mm-hmm.
I've learned that my game has nothing to envy from the top players in the world. I've known that for a long time, but since you don't compare yourself in a field with the best players in the world, you don't really see where you are compared to them. And I found that the thing that, you know, separates me from them is the small details. I think that's what makes a difference. Learning more from yourself. Also, these players have been competing, you know, these courses multiple times, and it's still my first time trying to get used to the people, the crowds, like the media days, the weeks. Because, for example, in college, it's just 3-4 day events since you get to the course and you leave, and here you get on a Sunday, you don't leave till a Sunday. So it's a long time that I'm still trying to process, trying to rest, trying to, you know, make the best out of every practice day. So those are small things that I know that I still have some improvement on are the ones that I believe that make the difference.
And Ballester, one of the candidates for the 2025 Haskins Award, presented by Stifel, is given annually to the Player of the Year in men's college golf, and a lot of top candidates in there, including Luke Plamton, arguably the most talked about amateur in the game right now. And here's a watch list for the 2025 Amica Award presented by Stifel. This one goes to the most outstanding player in the women's college game. And a lot of talent on this list. Carolina Chikara, Anna Davis, and of course, the winner of the Augusta National Women's Amateur last year, Lottie Wode of Florida State, also on that list.
Eamon, speaking of the women's game, I want to remind you, LPGA Tour returning to action with the first of three straight scheduled events in Asia. Last year's Patty Tabatanikit won in her homeland back in Thailand. We've got our pal Tom Abbott on the call this week.